Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Laura?
Hey, you gave me heart failure a little bit.
20 seconds? I have plenty of time.
Oh, that was funny. No, you didn't get on until the music, on my end, until the music was already playing.
Oh, it said 20 seconds. See, I think there's a delay in when I call and when you get me, but
I
anyway,
so
I heard the music. I thought, oh, I'm good.
We're fine.
Yeah,
I know,
no
a year ago, that would have really sent me into a tailspin, but now, oh, well, she'll call.
Eventually. Oh,
wow. I know. Well, today is Thursday, March 18th, and if you're joining us now, you're listening live, and today would be a great day to take callers. And so let me give you that number. It's 1-718-766-4332. Try to call on a phone that you've got free long distance so you don't have to end up paying that charge, but we would love to hear your questions. We have some email and website questions that we're going to tackle today, but if we had a live caller, that would just make my day. So if you've been thinking about calling, yeah, we'd love to have it. I do want to start with a couple of other kind of housekeeping things. I got an email from a mom who asked if she could have my phone number to call me, and I've gotten that in the past too, and I just want to say I love to talk to people, but I really don't take phone calls because I'm seeing clients and doing the website and blah, 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 blah. So the very best way to reach me is just to leave a comment on the website, especially if it's a comment related to your child, because chances are if you have that question, other parents have had that too. If you're a speech pathologist, I still love to get those questions on the website so that we have lots and lots of therapists, not only speech pathologists, but developmental interventionists or developmental therapists like Kate, even I've heard from an OT or so in the last year, so please just leave your comments there. If you feel like it's something that you don't want to put on the website, you can email me at laura@teachmetotalk.com, or if you really want to talk to me, call into the show. That's the very best way, but I did want to say that I don't routinely just return phone calls because otherwise I'd be on the phone all day.
Even worse than normal. Yeah, and let's say if somebody wanted, if she had a, you know, a lot of the people who want to communicate with you are parents of a child with a language delay, and they have specific questions. But anytime anybody calls for the show, we don't care if they say their real name. We don't care if they say their child's real name or, how, you know, well, I guess how old is kind of relevant. But, you know, we don't care about specifics, and we respect people's right to keep their situation private. But we'll just ask questions about the child, and, you know, they can change the name, they can change where they live, they can change all the specifics, so nobody in the world would know who it was calling, but we could still share the information with other families.
That's a great point. And then we have a Facebook fan page for the website at teachmetotalk.com, but it's on Facebook. And I'm on Facebook all the time on my little personal page, but the fan page for the website, I don't routinely monitor those comments as well. So if you're sending me a question on there, I may not see that for a while. So the very best way is on the website and then with a backup with email. So just wanted to mention that too. But please check us out on Facebook because I would love that. And there are occasionally discounts on the Facebook page, too, for the DVDs. The Facebook discount right now, if you are ordering a DVD in the Google checkout process, you can use capital F, capital B for Facebook and get a 20% discount off any DVD purchase. And I just realized today that the two-year anniversary coupon that was supposed to be expired in December has not been taken off that yet. So if you're listening live, you can still get a 25% discount for, oh, maybe the next couple of hours until I'm back and can take care of that. So that discount code is the number 2 with YA for two-year anniversary. So thought I'd put that out there, too. And then the third thing I want to say is a speech pathologist named Leslie left me a comment on the website today, and I accidentally deleted it. So, Leslie, if you're listening, and she said she listens to the podcast, Kate, and that she had a great story. She said she stayed home with her kids for 14 years, and she's just now starting to work again. And she downloads the podcast and listens to them between appointments.
Oh, no.
But she's working at early intervention. And so she was real complimentary about the show and said she liked that we, you know, have a sense of humor about this. And so anyway, Leslie, if you're listening, please send me that again so that I can send you the information that you asked for. So that's...
Isn't there like a recently deleted button that you... Cause I've
well,
been,
you would
yeah.
think. I deleted the whole website last week and kind of... Yeah, that took that was kind of a little bit of pressure there, but the, our great graphic design person had luckily backed the system up and was able to get that back up and running after like 12 hours. So that was a bad day. I think that was last Thursday night. So hopefully we will not have any more crises like that. All right, let's get to today's show. I have the first email from... Actually, I think she sent this through Facebook, and that's why I think she probably sent it a few days before I took a look at it. So, again, you can contact me through there, but the best way is going to be at teachmetotalk.com. But anyway, this letter is from Nina, and it says, Hi, I'm Nina from the Bahamas. I have a four-year-old little boy named I don't know if I should say his name or not. We're gonna
Let's just go with Johnny. I call all little boys Johnny, so...
You know, and my husband really thinks that's funny that you say that. But
I don't know why. That's just my all-purpose generic boy's name. Johnny, I don't know why. It doesn't really relate to your husband, but anyway.
So I've tried to tell him that. Okay. Okay, Johnny had fluid in his ears from 3 months old. He got tubes put in at 2, and he had no words. He seemed, and then she says, he seemed to understand them, but he could not say them right. So this is when he was 2. We began speech therapy a month after the tubes were placed in our main city in the Bahamas, which is like 50 miles from here, and we would have to travel by boat or plane. Can you imagine that, having to take your kid by boat or plane for therapy? Gosh, some of our moms are challenged to, you know, answer the door sometimes. But anyway. Okay, he was put on a home program, and we traveled once a month to renew it and get an hour of therapy. Well, the therapist/pathologist was not very helpful. I had to keep bugging her for the program since she hardly ever returned my calls or emails. Aw. I spent hours searching the internet for ideas and spent like 2 half-hour periods each day working with him. I ordered her DVDs, which were a huge help to me and my family. Thank you so much for taking the time to make them. Now he's doing fairly well in preschool, a little behind his peers in writing. Let's see, how old does she say he is now?
Four.
Oh, 4. Here it comes. Yeah. At 4, his articulation is still an issue. And remember, for moms that don't really know all this speech talk, articulation just means how intelligible you are or how your sounds, your speech sound production, you know, whether you get the right sounds in the right places. So she says his articulation is still an issue, especially P, B, and M. He can say the M at the start of a word but won't use it in the middle of words. He uses letters at the back of his throat like C's or, you know, K's and G's to replace them. We've been working on blowing and getting him to pucker his lips. His blowing has improved, but he won't pucker his lips. He's never puckered his lips to kiss you. He always kisses with his mouth open. Part of that makes me want to go, ew, but anyway. I'm sorry this is so long, but I just wanted to know if there's anything I can do to help him with this. I know he should be seeing a professional, but there's no one here on the island. It's only 1/2 mile wide and 1.5 miles long. Wow. There are more therapists in Nassau, but right now it's very hard for me to travel back and forth there, and I was told that the one he was seeing was the best, so I can't imagine what the others are like. Thank you so much for reading this. I know you're very busy. Thank you. Okay, so that's great that she got the DVDs, and it's even better that she decided that she was going to have to do the bulk of working with him at home, as I think all moms should aspire to.
Really,
so that
because,
was
I mean, really, even though she doesn't sound like she was, despite her gallant efforts to get to that speech therapist, wasn't overwhelmed with that speech therapist, even the best speech therapist once a week or twice a week really isn't enough. So
right,
she's
yeah.
doing exactly what she needs to do on her own, which
exactly.
is, I'm sure, why he's made the progress he has.
Absolutely, and I just want to applaud all moms that are in that position. You really can do this, and your efforts on a daily basis make more inroads in helping your child get better than any, you know, hour or so, because think about all the other hours that are in the day and the week that you're with your child. So I do love it when moms really take ownership of their own child's progress and own child's program like that. And it can be done with just a little bit of guidance. You can make lots and lots of progress there. So love that. So her specific questions were that PB and M, and she said he's got a good M at the start of the word. If she were on the phone right now, I would ask her if she had a good P and B at the beginning, but she's not here. So we'll assume that he probably doesn't, since she said that he just has that M.
And kind then of she sounded said he, like that, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so what I would do is use that Q. We call it the popper sound, and have him really try to imitate those poppers, pop, 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 pop. And I call them with P's and B's a soft popper and a loud popper, only with kids that I think that soft and loud actually are meaningful. You know, we talk about, you know, do it loud, ba, 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 or do it soft, ba, 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 you know, or quiet. And if kids using a B for a P, I'll say, you know, let's make that quiet. We have to do a quiet popper, ba, ba, like this. You know, let's make it like a baby, ba, ba, ba. And then, you know, in reverse, if they're doing a P for a B, you know, we talk about making it loud and big. And so those are some cues that you can use. What other things do you do for P and B, Kate?
excuse me. I don't necessarily do the big and little or loud and soft, but I definitely do the popper a lot. And recently I've taken to using my index finger at my mouth and doing pop as I make the sound, you know, tell me, uh-huh. Tell me, whatever. And that seems to help a lot of kids. I don't exactly understand why, but it definitely focuses their eyes on your mouth. And a lot of my kids will take their little index fingers and do the exact same thing. You know, if I have a kid telling me, oh, and he's trying to say ball, I'll say, you forgot your popper, tell me. And then I, you know, always kind of hesitate, make a big deal out of it, like, now I'm going to say it. And I put my finger up. And a lot of times they'll take their little fingers and do the exact same thing. And, you know, not 100% of the time, but a pretty good percentage of the time, they will get the B on there if they watch me and then use that same finger at their lips to call their attention to it. I don't know. It works. That's all I know. So that's one that I use quite a bit lately.
And that's called a touch cue. And, yeah, there's a whole there's a whole
volume
of literature about that.
Touch cue. I didn't even know what to call it. But it works, and I don't use a lot of touch cues, but B's and P's seem to be really good for using that.
And for kids, we have a little boy that Kate and I share right now that's putting his top teeth on his bottom lip, like doing an F or a V for that. And there's, you know, again, the rationale for that is a lot of these kids really don't like for their lips to touch. It's kind of a sensory issue. They're a little bit defensive about having their mouths closed. You'll see that a lot with kids, too, with lower muscle tone, because they don't routinely, you know, they sit kind of with their mouths open and have that open mouth posture, and they might drool. You might see this kind of error also with kids who are routinely sick and their little noses are congested, and so they're so used to breathing with their mouths open that they kind of forget and really have a hard time getting those lips together. So, you know, this is a pretty common error with kids, not being able to do those lip sounds. Another thing that I do for kids that's like a touch cue is when their mouths are open like that, I take their lips, you know, put my fingers around their lips, you know, my index finger above their top lip and my thumbs under their bottom lip. If it takes one hand, I'll do it with one hand, but boy, I sure have been known to kind of, in a playful, kind of fun way, kind of grab them and say, no, get your lips together like this, and, you know, close their little lips with my fingers. And if some kids hate that kind of cue, and they're so tactily defensive anyway that that's really going to freak them out. And I don't do a ton of, you know, trying to prompt as a whole method like that, where you're really using your fingers to do help facilitate certain sounds. And I don't think that that's an appropriate treatment methodology for lots of toddlers at two, because I think it's really invasive. But occasionally I will really reach down and try to help a kid realize, oh, my lips have to be closed when I say that sound. A lot of therapists will also use mirrors to help a child see that, and for a four-year-old, that might be appropriate. I don't always use mirrors with toddlers, with twos and even threes, because I think sometimes it's fun for kids, but a lot of times it's very distracting, and you never end up getting anything done with that. But a lot of therapists are really fond of that. I haven't really found a way to make that work unless a kid is just totally vocal when he looks in the mirror and is not apt to do that kind of sound play without the mirror. Has that been your experience with mirrors too, Kate? I think I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, you know, in 10 years I've had a couple of kids that, for whatever reason, they responded well, and I think I probably used to try it more than I do. I did have a child recently on my caseload who was definitely a speechy kid, and we happened to work, she was at this really nice daycare, and we worked in their media center. That tells you it's a nice daycare when they have a media center.
That's my kind of daycare.
Yes, it was very nice. And one of the things they had in the media center was some nice big mirrors, just flat mirrors mounted, and she actually would sit at the table, which I almost never do, but this little girl was pretty mature for her age, and we'd sit at the table and play, and there was a mirror there. And I would use that because it wasn't something I had to take out or hold up for her or let
right.
her manipulate. It was very easy to say, look, and then it was big, so I could do it in the mirror, and she would look at me my reflection in the mirror, and for her that also worked really well. But just to have like a small mirror, I've had it cause more trouble than it's been worth, but I've had a couple kids who that really did work for. You know, they just love looking at themselves and playing those little mouse games in the mirror, and they do it. But a lot of kids, you know, before you know it, they're licking the mirror and, you know.
All kinds of things. And you have to wrestle it from their hands. Yeah.
Right. So I could see where with an older child who really was working on lots of articulation stuff, that could be very helpful. With a two-year-old, it's a little dicey.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But with a four-year-old, she could really try that.
Mm-hmm.
With kissing, which she specifically asked about because she said he doesn't do a pucker, and by four, really, that's unusual to have a four-year-old still not able to really do a pucker for a kiss. So that lets me know, okay, there's either kind of an oral apraxia going on, meaning that he has motor, coordination sequencing problems, kind of trying to make his mouth imitate movements that his mom does. Because I'm sure she said, no, like this, you know, it wouldn't, surely, you know, she's given him cues like that and that's not enough. So what I do with and this, again, I don't routinely work with four-year-olds. I work with 1, 2, and sometimes 3-year-olds, is make a big deal about getting their lips closed for a kiss, and I try to do a little squeaky sound so that they're really looking at me, and, you know, that's kind of a novel noise, and have him really kind of try that and make it really big and real animated and do that little squeaky, whistly thing and poke your lips way, way out when you're doing that. And, again, that might be something that she could grab his little lips and say, like this, and kind of smush those little lips out, you know, for a big in the mirror might be a good way to try that with him, because then he could see, oh, gosh, you know, mommy's mouth is closed and my mouth is still open, so that might be a way. Another thing I do with toys is really pretend to kiss a lot of toys, like little plastic characters or baby dolls or whatever you want to use, and, again, make a big deal about getting your lips together and big pucker and do a funny sound with it, whether, you know, you're just doing or that big little squeal so that they notice that.
I don't believe I can make that noise. I have not perfected that sound. I'm going to be working on that in the next week. I've never used that sound.
Well, you might have another trick for that. Do you have another trick for teaching that kissing other than going, ooh, that's gross, close your mouth.
Definitely do a lot of the kiss this toy, kiss that toy, kiss everything, but I probably use, and I don't guess it's not the same real movement of the lips, but as far as an M sound, I use your a lot.
Yeah.
That seems to really, they like that sound. They think it's funny. And
right,
I've had lots
do that
kids
a lot.
Who really, really struggled with an M sound, be able to get it when I'm going, tell me, they'll do it. So.
Yeah. And then a little lip kind of with kissing, like a little lip, even with kisses, blowing kisses, you know, to try it that way. Anything to help get his little lips closed. Chapstick is another good trick for helping kids learn how to close their lips, because you can put it on there and then have them rub their lips together and they have that little feedback. Sometimes kids who don't like their lips together, though, also hate the sticky feel of chapstick, so you might have to be a little bit creative. When you read oral motor treatment books, they tell you to put things on their lips like yogurt or peanut butter and have them rub that together. And for a kid who is really defensive about chapstick or, again, even getting his lips together, that sounds like a good idea to me. It's a way to kind of motivate them more. I've given kids those big flat suckers and had them, you know, put their lips on either side of that. That's kind of a good thing to do to help them get their lips together. Whistles that have really flat openings, you know, when you look at a whistle, you think all whistles are the same, you know, oh, no, 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 or even, I guess I'm thinking about birthday horns, because a lot of birthday horns are, they can be round with the round mouth openings, or flat, so for kids who don't do a lot of lip closure for P's, B's, and M's, you'll want to get the flat ones that look more like a rectangle for an opening, you know, that would be another thing to try, and that's fun to try with him. But it sounds like he does have some coordination problems since he had a hard time blowing and kissing, and he's four, and that's really atypical. We would see those kinds of things with typically developing kids. You know, they're closing their lips, and, you know, P's, B's, and M's are among the first sounds that they make. So it's good that she's targeting those and working on those. And then she had another, let's see, what did she say about... Oh, she said she can't get an M, ever get an M in the middle. And so what I try to do for that is use a word that they can say with an M at the beginning, but use it over and over. So if he can do moo for a cow, I wouldn't have the cow just say moo. We would pretend the cow is saying moo, 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 because then you're really getting the M. You know, it's even though it's at the beginning of the word, you've got it kind of in the middle of your utterance there. And a real word that you practice like that with, you know, kids is whose turn is it? You know, you're asking and making a big deal about it, whether you have ice cream or candy or whatever, you know, whose turn is it? And then you really model me, 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 or mine, 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 so that they're doing that M over and over and over again. So that would be a way that I would target kind of an M in the middle. You could look for more practical words like hammer and things like that, but I think we get better luck just using those one-word sequences and having M kind of in the middle of those, so...
Kids love those. I use those all the time just because if you're trying to work on even just, you know, increasing the length of whatever they're able to say or increasing putting the same word, you know, some kind of sequence or just trying to get them to talk at all, they love that, me and mine. And as you said, if you're really playful and really animated and really exaggerated, because I just use the put your hand on your chest for me and mine, and I'm always, you know, me, 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 and they'll really try for that.
They really do, and especially if you can, like, if I'm working on that at home with a mom, I'll have her ask, you know, who wants this cookie, and then I say, me, 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 and I'm really modeling that so that the kid sees me, and I actually take the cookie and eat it so that I'm the one who really got it because I said it first, and then you do it again, and you do it again, and you make it real fun, again, and not to the point where they're laying down crying, you know, or tantruming because they're upset about it, but it is a little bit more motivating when they see, oh, gosh, Laura said that, and she got that cookie, and I want that cookie, so I'm going to try that. So, you know, that's another way to do it is have another adult do it. So, you know, for her, she could have dad do that. You know, who wants this or whose turn is it? And then have mom, you know, really act over the top using that word. That would be a good way that I think she could target that. Okay, I think we
answered
all.
The other one I would say is I wonder if this little guy can say mama. I think
he can.
He
and
can.
She said that's the only word he uses with an M at the beginning and in the middle, is what
she said.
I believe.
Well,
Yeah, and there's an article on the website at teachmetotalk.com. I think it's in the intelligibility section with some more specific cues. Remember we talked about that when we were doing the holopraxia series that we did back late summer, and you can check that out too. I think there's some more ideas there that we probably didn't talk about. So check that out, and thanks for your email, Nina, and good luck with everything. And once again, kudos to you for being so
diligent.
Yeah, that's a great word. I was thinking about perseverance and thinking, what tense of that do I use? But just doing that and working with him every day, because that's what it takes. And, you know, that methodology of playing one-on-one with your child, and, you know, that's just not all Kate and me. There's a whole treatment approach called floor time that Dr. Stanley Greenspan recommends that parents do with children with significant social and communication delays, and he actually recommends for children that are seeing him 7 or 8 episodes of 20 to 30 minute play per day like that on the floor with mom and dad, those back and forth reciprocal exchanges. And he feels like that's what lots of children who are autistic or, again, have those red flags for those social and communicative disorders, that's what it takes. Is that, and it's not, you know, a lot of speech pathologists will say, oh, you can just do it in daily routines and that's enough. Oftentimes it's not enough, because if they were going to pick it up in daily routines, you wouldn't have a problem. Yeah. They would have already done it. Yeah. So you've got to make it more purposeful. And play is the very best way to kind of hook a kid and get them to want to interact with you and do that. And I just think that's the best way to do it. You can have them request snacks all day long and talk to them while they're in the bathtub and talk on your walk. And you can do all that. You need to do all that. However, I think the parents that see the most significant progress that I've worked with have been parents who schedule a time that they're going to do their at-home therapy or their play sessions or whatever they want to call it with their children, and they're committed to that. It's not just every few days, it's every day. And again, that sometimes they're doing it several times a day. She said she had 2 20-minute periods. That's great. And
that is great.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly recommend that to parents. And, you know, again, there are all kinds of excuses, and certainly I know that's hard to fit in, but honestly, that's what it takes. So highly recommend that. All right, let's move on. This is a question from another mom, and she says, what a useful website. Something is wrong with our boy. He's 21 months, and this is the first time I read a description that fits so well. And she actually was looking at the article at on my website, teachmetotalk.com, called Helping Your Toddler Listen and Obey, Improving Receptive Language Skills. So that was the article that she's reading. She said, this is the first time I've read a description that fits so well. So I guess there's a description in that article about receptive language problems, children that don't understand language. She says, the problem with him is worse, as is he doesn't speak at all. At 8 months, he said ba-ba-ba and all kinds of random noises, but since then he stopped trying. He's very intelligent and has very good motor skills and memory. He can go up and down the stairs alone, crawling carefully. He climbs on stuff, and he uses various machines, including playing games on my iPhone. Well, I don't have an iPhone, Kate. Do you? Do you know
No.
how hard that is?
No, but I probably couldn't do it, so it's a good thing
Yeah.
I don't have one, or I'd feel really stupid.
Yeah,
no,
I know.
Don't.
I know. So he's got the whole push the button, make something happen. He knows how to do that. She says, but he seems to grasp no language spoken to him. Oddly, he will immediately react if I start singing to him. Could it still be what's described in this article if he doesn't speak at all at this age, or might there be something more serious? So, do you want to take a stab at this first, Kate? Or do you want me to go ahead? What do you want to do?
I don't know how direct you're going to be. Do you really want my honest answer here?
Let's just go for it today. Yeah.
Okay. Could there be something more serious going on? Yes. I would say there are a couple things that she mentioned that would really give me reason for concern. If this were a child I were seeing, or this happened to be my baby, one is the total lack of response to what's being said to him. I mean, she says he really understands nothing I say to him. And it's 21 months, isn't that what he is?
21 months, yeah.
21 months. Kids should be really pretty responsive to what you're saying. You should be able to tell them to go get the choo-choo, and he can even go to his room and get the choo-choo, assuming he likes his choo-choo. Or daddy's home, and he looks and runs to the door, or where's your cup? Get mommy your cup, you know, and he runs and gets his cup. And if he's not doing at least that, not to mention being able to point to a few pictures of things he's familiar with, you know, just really, really getting a lot of what's said to him, then that's a major red flag, I think. You know, I would be really, really concerned just about that in and of itself.
Me too.
She also, my dog's losing it, also noted that he used to do babbling, you know, when he was 8 months or so, and now it sounds like he's really, really pretty quiet. I don't know that I would necessarily say that he's showing some regression, but it certainly is not typical for kids to start off babbling on a fairly consistent basis and then just kind of go quiet, you know.
And I'm so glad you said that, because haven't you had parents kind of question that and say, and I even had a mom on the website, gosh, I guess it was right after the website started, and she said that her pediatrician told her that it was normal for kids to lose words, and that is wrong. That is absolutely not true. That is a bald-faced lie. Children with typically developing language do not lose words. You may not hear a word for a little bit until the situation presents itself for them to use the word again, but losing words is not part of normal language development, so that's always a red flag. Okay, continue, Kate. Sorry.
So I would be, you know, just that in and of itself, even if he did have reasonably typical receptive language skills, even though, he babbled and got quiet would give me reason for concern, but particularly in light of the fact that his receptive skills appear, according to what she says, to be very, very low, and then he's lost this ability to babble or use any true words at all. I guess he never really used words, but he's even gone quiet. And then she mentions about he really comes to life with the music, which isn't, you know, inherently a bad thing, but it sounds like she really notices a big difference in how he responds to music relative to how he responds to other things. And for that, I mean, like I said, if he were responding to other things in a positive, animated, responsive way, and he also responded to music that way, hey, great, you know.
Right, right.
The problem is the way she kind of puts it, and I may be reading into this, but I kind of hear her saying, I don't really get that response with other things. I get
right.
that response with music. And that, if that is, in fact, how she meant it, would be another red flag for, you're not really, it sounds like she's not really getting too much response on other things, and she sees them really light up and twinkle, as I like to say, when the music comes on or when she sings. And I'd say in that, my response is, I'm concerned he's not responding to other things either. Not only to what she's saying to him, but when mommy tries to play a little peekaboo game with him, or when mommy tries to, you know, play a tickle game, or when mommy bounces him on her lap, is she seeing him twinkle and light up to that? Because those are kind of those social indicators that most babies typically love and can't get enough of, and they seek it out. And certainly by 21 months, a kid usually gets those games, you know.
Right.
They want them, and they ask for more, even if they have no words. They let mommy know, let's do that game again. And it sounds like when she really sees them light up is when she sings, which isn't bad, but she needs to see him light up in a lot of other circumstances, you know.
Right. And so I think she should treat this like it is a very serious issue and go ahead and get an assessment. If she's in the United States, she can call her state early intervention program, and you can get information about your own state's early intervention program by Googling your state name plus the phrase early intervention. And that program is available in every state in the United States in some way, shape, or form. Different agencies in different states do it different ways, but you can get a free assessment and then pay if your child qualifies for therapy. And I, this child at 21 months who's understanding nothing by his own mother's report will qualify for speech therapy. So she should go ahead and do that. And I'm
and maybe
really
some other therapies. I mean, you know, we don't know him. We don't know what else is going on, but it wouldn't surprise me. He could have some sensory issues. He could have some cognitive delays. He could have some social. I mean, it sounds like the social-emotional piece is a little bit disjointed at this time based on, you know, his response.
Sure.
Music. So, yeah, and just a cautionary note, in case she's listening or listens in the future, don't hesitate. Don't let your pediatrician, and I don't know your pediatrician from Adam, but a lot of doctors will tell their mommies, oh, it's not a problem. I don't see anything wrong. Besides, he's not even two. Why would you call? You know, they'll tell her to wait. And really, this just doesn't sound like a child that I would wait at all on. And secondly, some states, we happen to be in Kentucky, and I've formerly worked in Indiana, and they're both really pretty good. But I do know some families who've moved to other parts of the country, and supposedly we all have the same federal laws, but in other states, there are sometimes very long waiting lists for speech therapists for whatever discipline you might need. So even if you get the evaluation in your 45 days, you may wait 3 or 4 or 5 months to get an actual live body in your home to help you. So call today and, you know, get the ball rolling.
Yeah, I strongly recommend that too. And the waiting and seeing with a child who doesn't understand anything at 21 months is just a recipe for disaster, in my opinion, because you're going to let him get 3 or 4 more months behind, plus have your window of waiting. So, you know, you don't, if you don't watch it, he's going to end up to be darn near 3, not talking, not understanding, not socially connected, and you're going to have a bigger problem on your hands. So now is the time to treat that and really get the ball rolling on that. There are tons of articles on my website for parents to read and kind of get a handle on, okay, this is how you do it. And I've already talked about the DVDs that I have a little bit, but you can see clips of the DVDs on there and read the parent testimonials that really talk about how the DVDs helped a parent see how to work with a kid at home. And sometimes a parent will think they're doing just fine with looking through a book or casually narrating what the child is doing. And with a child like this, you have to really change your strategies and really be right in his face and really animated and sing and, you know, do all those things that you know we're going to pull him in, because it sounds like he does his own thing the majority of the time, meaning that he totally
basically she has to learn, and it's not easy, and it, like you said, just reading it and getting information is not the same as seeing it. But she has to learn to be as much fun as her singing. Every interaction
every
she has with this baby, with this child, she needs to learn somehow. How do you make mealtime, bath time, walk outside, play on the floor time as much fun as singing for him? It's not easy, but it can be done. And research clearly, clearly supports that now is her best shot at getting in there and making some huge inroads into his development. And I think that kids who present like he sounds like he does, they're like the best poster kids for early intervention. Because we frequently see them go from this little guy who's pretty disconnected and doesn't really respond to language and doesn't really seem to like too much in his environment at 21 months. And at 3, woo-wee. You know,
he's looking good. Yeah.
They're looking. I'm not saying that there are no issues by 3 oftentimes, but the difference is remarkable. And, you know, this isn't our theory. There's definitely lots of research to support the idea that birth to 3 is the ticket for kids who look like he does at 21 months. So don't waste the day.
I know, and I feel like those kids really could go either way.
Yes.
And intervention is your very best way of making sure he doesn't end up with a lifelong communication or social communication disorder. And by that, that's really kind of code for autism. Mm-hmm. And so by doing the techniques and strategies and activities to help him learn language, to help him socially connect to you, to help him learn to engage, Think about it as saving your baby and helping him learn to learn. And so
I
that's
think about
what
it like
do.
That. I mean, when I start with those kids, I always think, you're in there, you're in there. I know we can get you. I know we can get you. And I mean, almost makes me teary. But it is. I mean, it is like this awakening of a little personality and of a connection, you know, to the therapist, to the mommy, to the daddy, to the siblings. It just is like, whoa. I had a mom recently in a meeting, and this little guy that her child sounded a lot like him. We started with him pretty young by our standards. He was like 19 months. And we just had our six-month meeting a couple weeks ago, and the mom said, I just think he's doing so well. I just don't really think he'd be anything like this if we hadn't started therapy. And you know, we were all kind of like, yeah. And I'm not tooting my own horn. I think the biggest difference, and we said this the last go-round, but it's true. It's not only going to be the therapy that he gets, because it doesn't matter how great we are, we think we are, we don't really get your child enough to make that big a difference. We can make some progress, but it's the difference in how mom and dad are going to learn to relate to that baby and to figure out what they have to do to make that connection. That's what really makes the difference.
It does, and I say to parents all the time when they're talking about progress and are, you know, being so sweet to me about it and saying, oh, Laura, thank you, and I say, hey, this isn't all me. I'm here one time a week for an hour. This is what you guys have taken and you've implemented and you've made a priority for your family. And some moms almost get offended when we say that. I remember last year the nasty grams we got from the people in England, because they were saying that lots of their speech therapists, and I guess they were listening to the receptive language shows, and they felt like we were putting a lot of that pressure on moms and saying if a child has a receptive language delay, it has to kind of be the mom's fault. She's not working with him enough. We're not saying that at all.
Oh, not at all.
Not
any more than
all.
I'm saying that this little boy has his delays because of something she did. I don't believe that for a minute.
I don't either. I'm trying to make the distinction. But you are really the only person, you and dad and grandma or whoever else is involved, who can make a big difference intervention-wise.
Right.
And so that's what we're saying. We're not saying it's your fault.
I didn't realize that's why they were mad at us, Laura, that they thought we... a revelation. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
Well, that was...
I thought they said we were bashing somebody, but I didn't really get that they thought
they
were saying it was the mom's fault for not being a better mommy.
Right. That was the big rub. I mean, it's the beginning of the thing back to me was that we were insensitive because we were saying that a child was clueless or something, or that we were just describing a child. And again, we don't mean to be rude or insensitive. We're just talking, just plain language.
I think I probably used my off-the-cuff expression. I'm pitching, but they're not catching. And that is, you know, insensitive if you're talking about a specific child. But this mom is saying herself, I'm talking and he's not responding.
Right, he's
you know,
not responding.
He's just isn't really getting.
Yeah, and we're not saying that it's her fault that she's not done a lot of this. We're
absolutely
saying,
not.
Though, the only way that you have a hope of making this better is for a mom to become really, and dad and, you know, other adults, to become really hyper-focused on helping him socially connect, learn to understand words, and then finally talk. And moms make the biggest difference. It's not a mom's fault. But
or a stay-at-home dad.
Or a stay-at-home dad.
Whoever's
really
with that child the most, we do tend to say mommies. But, you know, if you're a single dad and this is your situation, then it's you, dad. It's whoever's really with that child the most. And dads certainly can, even if they're not stay-at-home dads. I have lots of little boys, particularly, who love their daddies, and daddies have the best ability to throw them and chase them and tickle them and wrestle with them, and they love that kind of play. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
the connection, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, again, don't misread anything into what we're saying. We're not saying all this emphasis on parents, but it does really take a parent to make them better. So, that's my opinion. I'm not backing off that.
No
really
early intervention program is going to pay for enough therapy to help that child. That's
right.
The truth. I mean, I think Kentucky's decent in what they'll reimburse for, but it takes hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And, you know, a million, maybe a millionaire could pay for it, but no normal person could pay for it.
Mm-mm. And that's what we say when parents say, can you just move in with me and do this all day? Get your checkbook ready, baby. You know, parents have to really do it. So,
even if you could afford it, it really needs to be the connection with the parents, because that's really where their social emotional growth starts. And if it's not there, that's where it really needs to start growing from. So even if they could afford to pay us, it really needs to be their parents or their caregivers in the first place. So,
and as therapists, we need to facilitate that. And I love it when a kid loves me, and I do love it. You know, I have a mom right now that told me that her little boy had a procedure that kind of precedes the sleep study, and she said, oh, my gosh, he said, I want Laura, I want Laura, I want Laura a million times. And for a second, I felt like, oh, that's so sweet, and then I felt like, I hate that for that mom, because she was there. And, you know, she's...
Well, maybe he thought you'd get him out of there.
Maybe he did. Let Laura save me. But she was really, you know, I want him to be that connected to her. And she's a professional mommy who is doing great now. But she really, I don't think, she didn't really know that it took play on the floor every day to make that fun and to make language come alive for him. And so,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in a perfect world, every child would have that play on the floor with mommy or daddy every day. But the truth is, typically developing kids do not need that play on the floor the way that kids with language and other delays really need.
Right, because they're learning words throughout the day.
Right.
They're learning it. It's coming almost by osmosis. I mean, you say it, they understand it, they know it, they respond to it, and eventually they say it back to you.
And so the typical approach, the standard American approach anyway, to parenting where, you know, you're talking to them, you're kind of narrating what you're doing, you're reading them a book, you're talking about their body parts in the bathtub. I mean, these just kind of casual, as you described, the way some parents, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of everyday life. But for a kid with, you know, language delays or other delays, that just isn't usually enough.
Right. It's just not. And, you know, it's not right or wrong. It just is. I say that all the time. That's just the system he came with.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to do things to make it really, really purposeful. So there's that. All right. I want to move on to this one because I emailed this mom back and told her we would be discussing her question today.
Oh,
so let's
move
on to our last one.
Okay.
It says, hi, Laura, I've written to you before. I have twin boys who are 26 months. They have a vocabulary of 35 to 50 words or more. Yay. Okay, and then she says, a lot of them, she means the words.
Wait, how old are they?
26 months.
Okay.
2 years, 2 months.
Okay.
A lot of them have the consonant dropped off at the end of the word, and they don't use all 50 every day. So the words are coming, but they're not chatty, chatty, chatty yet. That's how I take that. Is that how you take that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're working with them continuously and with a speech pathologist twice a week. I've noticed, though, with two-word phrases that they can repeat them if I say one word at a time. For example, if I say baby and then say sleep, they can repeat it. But if I say baby sleep, they say ah, sleep. So the addition of two words in fast sequence is giving them trouble. They will only either say the last or the first word in the phrase or shorten the first word to be something like ah or da. Once again, I know this is an indication of a speech disorder, but I was wondering if it also could be kind of normal in speech-delayed children without a disorder. My kids are too young for an apraxia diagnosis, and especially since they are only using single words, this is what my SLP has been telling us. I'm not rushing for a diagnosis either, but I do want to know if my boys are still within the range of normal speech development just on a delayed basis. However, on the bright side, they learn their alphabet at 22 months and can say every letter perfectly. They also know the sound that each letter makes. They can count to 20 and know all the colors and shapes. They say them pretty well, but articulation is still an issue. Any thoughts you can give are greatly appreciated. Thank you for your input. All right. Kate, why don't you do our soapbox part, and then I'll address the other part.
Yeah, let me be the bad guy.
Leave the dirty work to Kate today.
They don't have my email address, so that's okay. Okay. First, let me just say, on a positive note, these kids are really doing pretty well.
For being
twins and being 26 months, if I were working with them, I'd be thinking, hey, we're moving right along.
Me too.
You know, are they significantly delayed? No, they're delayed, but not in a big, bad way. So having said that, the soapbox is, and if you've listened to any other of these podcasts, it usually does rear its ugly head. I am not a big fan of doing lots of that counting, colors, numbers, letters. I must say, on a positive note, I'm kind of impressed that they actually know the sounds with the letters.
Me too.
Somebody has really been working on those letters. But I really don't see the significance or relevance or importance of doing too much of that. It seems to me there's a lot that should precede that. I'd be more concerned or more focused as those babies' mother about increasing their vocabularies, increasing the number and variety of words they're using, than I would be on colors, numbers, letters, blah, that all that pre-academic stuff. I just think they're just barely over two. Nobody's going to be testing them on those for at least a couple years.
Right.
You know, so I just say, you got that. Go back to that speech stuff.
Yeah.
And
move
focus
on a little bit.
Yeah. So.
And it sounds like, and I'm just going to say this too, kids really, a lot of kids will kind of hyper-focus on that stuff. And again, we think about kids with autism, and I don't think these little boys are anywhere near that, kind of based on what she said. But a lot of times, those kinds of words or those kinds of really visual things are what really turn on kids on the spectrum. So a lot of parents and therapists kind of hyper-focus on that because they think, okay, that's the only thing he likes, and we understand that. We're just saying there's a whole big world out there that at two that you need to know about and understand and be able to say before you get to numbers, letters, colors, and shapes. But it sounds like she's done a good idea or done a great job with that. You know, she's worked on that. But if I were her, I'd drop all that and just get back to working on phrases. And again, if she keeps building their vocabularies with a variety of words and so that those words become more spontaneous and consistent, that those phrases are going to come on their own unless they have real sequencing issues. You know, and trying to imitate a word and like baby sleep, trying to say asleep, you know, I would start to think about motor planning or, you know, a sequencing disorder if they can't imitate those phrases yet, but it doesn't sound like their speech pathologist thinks that's it. It sounds like she thinks they just need more spontaneous words, and then that's going to come in on their own. And I made the mistake earlier in my career of trying to work on phrases too fast, and when I really started sticking to that, okay, they need 35 to 50 words, and I lean closer to the 50 side before I even think about phrases as a goal.
And on a pretty consistent basis. It does sound like this mom is really, really involved and focused on these twins. And so when she says whatever number she gave, 35 to 50 or something like that, but they're not consistent, I think that consistent is a clue there. I mean, my guess is like she knows all their words that they can say. And and when we say 35 to 50 words, we mean pretty much in a day. I mean, you know, there's
really
standard
consistently. You don't count it if you hear it once every 2 weeks. You know,
right.
That's not frequently enough. They need to really be talking enough so that a neighbor who hasn't seen them in a while or grandmother who doesn't see them all the time, if she came in the house, she would say, oh, my gosh, they're talking,
right.
You know, so that it would really be a lot enough to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I think she should keep focusing on that. And then if those boys are still struggling to combine those words, you know, imitatively or certainly spontaneously, when their vocabularies are solidly at that 50-word or beyond level, then that's when you would really kind of get concerned about sequencing. But the other thing that I wanted, that I told her in my response on the website, is to try some easier patterns, because I think when I routinely hear phrases with children and work on phrases with children, you pick two words from their core vocabulary and two words that they own, that they say a lot, completely unprompted by you. Usually it's something like bye-bye with someone's name, or some, you know, something that they love, you know, bye-bye choo-choo or bye-bye ball, or, you know, when you're putting things away, or most often it's a daddy, you know, bye-bye dada or bye-bye mama. Start with that. If a kid is, you know, if they've been in therapy, more is probably one of the first words they said and signed. So you want to use more with another word that they really own. And again, by that I mean that they're saying really consistently and totally on their own. You don't have to model it 10 times to get them to try to say it. They think about it on their own. You know, they're walk in the kitchen and say cookie, you know, and so you're going to use more cookie. So you want to use those well-rehearsed words. Other things I try are using words that naturally go together, like choo-choo train, or even some of those holistic phrases like I got it, I did it, those kinds of things. We usually start to hear those things, those easier patterns and those holistic phrases first before we would hear something like baby sleep, because that's not something that would naturally kind of go together. I mean,
yeah, baby sleep wouldn't be anywhere near. I wouldn't even think about that one. If I were going to do baby something, I'd do night-night baby.
Exactly, or bye-bye baby,
uh-huh,
when you're putting it away. Or if they love babies, more baby, you know, when they're asking for that. Or if they are, you know, if they say please a lot, you know, baby please for a request. So I wouldn't, the combination really does matter, and I try to tell parents that. And then when parents are getting really excited that they're saying lots of those, sometimes I have to say, now he's only using phrases when it's a well-rehearsed pattern, or when it's, you know, when it's something that he really knows with the word that he's not as comfortable with yet or doesn't really use consistently yet. You know, notice how he can't combine that. It's not just, you know, we don't have a big variety of phrases. And so sometimes kids will kind of get stuck in that core vocabulary phase where they can only do it if there are two words, you know, that are kind of in there. You know, and don't you know how those kids, Kate, that are doing phrases, but that you write them all down and you think, okay, that's only ten different words.
Uh-huh.
But they've switched them all around all kinds of ways. And that's great. That's how you start. But again, that's kind of a red flag for me when I know, gosh, we need to expand vocabulary, or when sequencing is kind of an issue. But I would do some easier patterns. I did ask her about the counting thing. I asked her if when they're counting, are they doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? My guess would be no, that they're doing big pauses between those with some prompting from mom and some imitating mom. So kids that can't do that sequential stuff, or like singing, you know, if they may, that some kids can't even like do a single syllable. You know how when you're singing like a song like Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and you'll have kids that go da, 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 da. You know, they're using one syllable to kind of do the whole thing. Kids that are apraxic really can't do that. So that would give you an indication that this might be, you know, more related to motor planning or sequencing than language. But it kind of sounds like it's still a language thing to me, that they don't have enough.
It does. And I think she's close. I think if she really, really works on getting the words that they already have in their little vocabularies to be more consistent, and also at that same time, you know, in conjunction with that, works on bumping up their vocabularies a little bit, poof, they're going to have some phrases pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I tell myself when a kid isn't quite doing phrases, I always say, okay, there's probably a problem with them not being spontaneous enough of these words. He may be spitting these out when I'm here, but, you know, let me look at him and see how many are really imitated, or kind of that delayed imitation where you might say bubbles and then they don't say it, but a minute later they're saying it and you're still thinking, gosh, he really did only say it because I said it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is still kind of modeled and prompted and cued by me, and they don't really have it. And more often than not, that's the language thing, is really that they just they don't know enough words yet to really be doing phrases. And there are some therapists that as soon as a kid can say mama and as soon as a kid can say bye-bye, they go right to working on bye-bye mama. But I don't buy it. I don't think it's successful. Some kids can do it, but I'd rather put my money and my time on building those solid vocabularies before you try to get phrases together. So there you go. And there's an article on my website about that. It's called Making the Leap from Words to Phrases, and it has all those recommended early phrases and easier combinations. And I don't fault that mom for not knowing that, for not knowing that baby sleep would be too hard.
Right.
You know, but she needs to start with some of those easier ones first. And children do usually imitate phrases before they're able to do them spontaneously, and that's why normal speech development, a mom will say, tell daddy bye-bye, bye-bye, da-da, and the baby at 17 months might pop out, bye-bye, da-da, because they've imitated that phrase. So it's great that she's trying to get that imitation piece in there, and she needs to keep doing that, but she does need to pick some easier targets.
And here's my other soapbox. Make sure to use a sing-songy, southern-sounding voice when you're... I'll bet if she tries night-night, baby, she just might get night-night, baby. Yeah, because baby sleep doesn't even really flow. Sleep is a hard, relatively hard word. You know, that's like setting the bar way too high. But if she'll go with the night-night, baby, she might get night-night, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she might. Oh, and you know what? She did have a response back to this, and I'm just now looking at this. I forgot that I had copied the response. And she did say... that they can say their alphabet and numbers quickly without much pause at all in between. The numbers don't always come out articulately, but the more they practice, the better they get. Yeah, that's great. My older twin can say all done and no way and up, down quickly as if it were one word, holistically, I guess as you put it. She says she'll work on easy phrases and hopefully that will come. She's not too worried about articulation because it is being perfected over time. So that's great. And she said right now, but she did say a little thing about how right now they're number one. They say it backwards like no. And she says it's kind of odd, but when I think about it, they're pronouncing it phonetically in reverse. One sounds like one, and they are saying now or no with a long O. And she says, funny, huh? They both do it. And she says she thinks one twin is copying his
brother. I'm sure they're just not telling her no. I'm only half kidding. What is it about one, Laura, that kids have such a hard time saying one? I have a lot of kids.
At the beginning.
The W
at the
sound?
Beginning. Yeah,
I have so many kids who will do two, three, four, but you can't get them to say one.
I know. The W at the beginning, and, you know, that sound is really, in typically developing speech and language, is a pretty early sound. But, again, if we see a kid... You know, and gosh, I'm going to open a whole another can of worms when I say this. And I said this a few weeks ago on the show, and I thought, gosh, I wish I hadn't said that, but I'm going to say it again. The whole delayed without it being disordered, not sure I really buy that. But anyway, you know, I think there's always, when they have little things like this, like they're saying no for one, and, you know, you could think, okay, is that a vowel? Is there a vowel wrong? Is there, you know, is it a phonological process? Is it blah, 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 blah? You know, that makes me think, okay, you know, there's some other stuff going on there as far as, you know, the disorder versus the delay.
But that being said, kids are doing pretty well.
They are doing pretty well. They are doing pretty well. And that's why, again, I said, oh, I probably shouldn't even be saying this. I probably shouldn't. Oh, don't panic if you're that mom and listening to this because it's not that big of a deal. I'm just kind of getting off on a philosophical rant here, and I shouldn't do that at the end of a show. But they're doing great. Make it easier. It sounds like you have a good speech pathologist who is trying desperately to keep you focused on language instead of worrying about a speech disorder at this point. I wouldn't be worried about that yet. I wouldn't be overanalyzing their speech sounds yet. Or, you know, I would, but I probably wouldn't be saying that to the mom. You know, I would really want to keep her focused on words, words, words.
Mm-hmm.
And the sounds will come. And she already said that they've fixed some of their other sounds that used to be
right
in air, or that they're already clear. So don't worry about any of that. And just keep plugging along, teach more words, teach easier patterns, and I bet you're not going to even a year from now remember that you were even worried about it. So
right.
There you go.
Because really they're considering their multiples and, you know, sounds like they've made pretty nice progress and they continue to make nice consistent progress. And I think if she just follows those few little suggestions, you know, they'll be at the phrase stage pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, I think mm-hmm. so too. All right, so we've finished another show today. Thanks so much for listening. We would love to have your comments from the website at teachmetotalk.com or your emails, laura@teachmetotalk.com. And if you want to reach me, again, best way is leave a comment on the website so other parents can benefit from our conversation. I think that's it for today, Kate.
Sounds great. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.